Well, today on our Tech for Business podcast, we're in week 3 of our Cybersecurity Awareness Month, which is pretty exciting. We're talking about smishing today, which I did not know was a term. Nate, our Director of Cybersecurity, joins us. And Nate, what the heck is smishing?
Yeah, it's funny. I think security people just always need to think of a next term to use for something.
Sure.
Right. It's like marketing teams. They always have to try and rebrand something just because they need more work to do, right?
Yeah.
we'll go pick on Microsoft's marketing team with the whole Intune, Entra, endpoint manager back to Intune. Again, they needed to justify that budget somehow. But yeah, so for smishing, what it is it's SMS phishing, so text message phishing essentially. So it can come in a lot of different flavors. So maybe we'll just jump right into that. Text messages, we get them all the time, right? We're always talking to our friends, so that we know that your phones are the easiest way to consume data. We're always looking at them, and threat actors know that as well, right? So we'll still get massive amounts of email spam. But how do you get directly to the user any point during the day? Text messages. And so you've probably seen this many, many times in the past is, hey, your package has been delivered. Click the link or it's been shipped, right? Click the link to see the tracking status. I'll go pick on probably a good example with the timing right now is we are 20 some days away from the election. So with that being said, you're probably seeing a big influx of text messages related to the campaigning. Now, maybe some are legitimate, trying to give you info about, one particular campaign or the other. But at the same time, there's also going to be attempts to collect data about you, or maybe bank accounts, or hey, make a donation to a campaign, log in with your bank account, and then they'll siphon money off. So a lot of different forms that it can come in, but the premise is text messaging and some type of nefarious intent to collect data, steal money, whatever that looks like.
For sure. I have not dug into any type of spam laws for, SMS texting and things like that. But I imagine if you don't sign up for it, then you probably shouldn't expect a text from whatever that is. So speaking about the election, if you didn't sign up to get information about X, Y, and Z, you probably can assume that that's a phishing text.
Yeah. I'm not a lawyer, first and foremost, so I'm not going to pull out specific laws, but I do know that the U.S. government is trying to crack down on a lot of this. So the FTC did just, FTC and FCC, both I know are kind of tied into this. I think the FCC is the one that was really trying to crack down on voice spam, right, and working with the carriers to crack down on it. And then there's also the FTC, which is where you can report some of this, which we'll get to in a little bit. But in general, yes, you should not be receiving spam.
Yes. So, yeah, I guess why does it work?
Because people are easily fooled. And we do the same things. We are just humans, or creatures of habit, right? We just fall into the same patterns. I think maybe on a different one, we just talked about bad passwords, and right, it's the top 100 passwords are the same bad passwords that we've picked for a decade. No matter what we do and how much we educate, we still do the same things. Because at the core of us, we are still the same type of human. There's underlying, circuitry in our head that just makes us work the way that we do. And unfortunately, we are susceptible to deception. Kind of going back to, things to consider is when we're taking a look at the emotional response to something, right, we have kind of the the center of our brain is going to be tied to more of the, the auto stimuluses. And then we kind of get into the emotional response of things. And then we start building out to the logical response. Now what that means is, what's the first thing to kind of fade away when, when we're either under pressure, we're stressed, whatever is happening is logic. Yeah. And then we start interacting mainly with the emotional side of ourselves. And so when we are taking a look at that is, threat actors are trying to get that sense of urgency, like you had mentioned, is when we do that, we go, oh, I just need to get something done and move on, right? And you've kind of broken that logic a little bit, said there's someone is waiting on me, or there's been text messages out there. This one's more common with phone calls, but text messages for, hey, grandpa, I'm in jail, or I'm, messaging you from the jail pay phone, or maybe not pay phone, but the phone service. Can you send me $200 so I can post bond or bail? Those are examples where now you're talking to the elderly and they have an emotional response because they don't want their grandchild, maybe their favorite grandchild, stuck in jail, right? They were so sweet and helped them weed the garden last weekend or something, right?
For sure.
So that's why we tend to fall for it. I would say smishing, specifically, maybe we also add on a component of distraction, right? Mm. Usually if we're sitting at the computer, we may be a little more focused on the task in front of us. We know that we do bounce from time to time, but when you're on your phone, you're probably moving around. You're probably, like me, have young kids screaming in your ear, wanting you to play in a sand pit. You're just trying to move on to the next thing at the time. So when lots of stuff is going on, it's harder to stay focused, stay vigilant. That's why text messaging is often so successful.
Definitely. And I think there's a little bit of culturally, at least, I remember back when it was so easy to call the wrong number or text the wrong number, that just happening was kind of normal. So I think riding a little bit of that wave of what we're used to and having those, oops, it's the wrong number, but who did I contact? Tell me about yourself. Give me that information. Is different than when we're at our email and we're kind of ready for it. We've been trained what to look for. So let's talk a little bit about specifically the smishing, these text messages, and what we should be looking for.
Yeah. One of the first ones going to be look at the phone number, right? If it's not in your contact list, maybe don't, give it a second thought. We do receive text messages, and this is going to depend based off of your, profession. I know, My dad works in a customer facing role where he's always having to text and call customers' personal lines, and it's always a new one. He works when houses are caught on fire and has to get them rebuilt. Ideally, you don't have repeat customers if your house lit on fire, right? So he's always interfacing with new customers, so it's hard for him. But if you, in general, are receiving a text message and they are not in your contact list, give it a second pause, right? First and foremost. This isn't perfect. It is possible to spoof phone numbers. And so take everything with a little bit of a grain of salt. We can touch on that in a little bit. But the other thing is look at the tone of the message as well. So similar to what we were talking about earlier, is the emotional response. Is this prompting you for urgent action? Is it threatening language? Right? Is someone saying, I'm going to do something to you if you don't listen to me? Right? Again, triggering those emotional responses. We know that. The other things are going to be requests for personal information. So if you know that's there's someone that's asking for bank account info, is your address this, right? Don't give it up, right? Especially over a text message. Just pick up the phone and call someone if you really need. All your text messages are technically not encrypted, so anyone can really get a copy of those. The links and attachments, this is the biggest one, is when you are texting someone, similar to like an email, somehow they need to either get info from you or have you do something, right? Just getting a simple text message isn't going to, trigger some type of action. Most of the time there's a link, right? Is your click here to track your, package delivery. Click here to see the latest credit card alert on your account. They're always trying to bring you to the next step. So that way you can either log into an account or whatever it looks like. So if you're getting a link from a strange resource, just don't click it. Maybe Google the link first to see, if others have reported it as malicious. And then the other one would be, is something too good to be true? There's a common saying, if it seems too good to be true, it's probably not true, right?
For sure.
So click
And we
here.
kind
Well, I'll give you $100 of gift
of,
cards. So.
yeah. I was going to say, in there, you kind of mentioned that first step of just slowing down and stopping, like taking a breath, really looking at it and evaluating and just going a little bit slower is so important. So, what else can we do to sort of evaluate or protect ourselves on our phones?
Always be skeptical. Security people are skeptical by nature. I don't really trust a whole lot of people. If something is absolutely critical, someone will call you. And then the other one would be verifying the source. So again, if it's from a strange unknown number, just again, maybe just let it go, right? But if it appears to be coming from a family friend, again, just call them, right? Don't give up the info over a text message. Hey, Ariel, did you intend to text me this? It seemed odd. And if they say yes, great, then continue the conversation.
I was going to say, I had a family member who got a phone call from their like public utilities, which seems like really scary because something was wrong with the bill or something was going on, and they said, "Okay, I'll call you back." And if it's them, they will not be angry about that. They will probably say, "Great, I will talk to you in a little bit," and then go somewhere else to find the correct number. I would not like redial, find their number on the correct public site, call them back, and see if it was them. That's something super simple and easy to do. And again, they will not be mad if you take those steps.
And it's funny because you said they'll not be mad, but you know who will be mad? The person on the other line, if it's a threat actor. We see that all the time. I'll give an example because my grandma's no longer here, but she had the fake Microsoft call, right? So she said, "Okay, I'm gonna go take this to the Microsoft store and I'm gonna see if something's actually wrong." They're like, "No, no, 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 you cannot do that, right? We need to address this now." She's like, "No, I'm gonna go to the store and I'll get it taken care of. Thank you, right? I'm not good on the phone." But yeah, the store will not be mad, but the other person on the line, when you try and do the right thing, they will instantly, elevate the, again, to try and get that emotional response from you again. So.
Yes, for sure. Yes, so that verify, and then, like you mentioned, not clicking or downloading attachments.
And then another little easy tip and trick is you can report this to your cell phone providers. So you can always send it to, I think it's 7726. That is a number that is designated for reporting spam to your cell phone provider. And then alternatively, you can always go to reportfraud.ftc.gov and go to their online web form and submit a complaint as well. So, and right before this, I was playing around with their podcast or with their form. One of the really interesting things that I saw was when you go to submit the type of problem, they have an option for just an annoying phone call. I thought that was kind of funny, is
Just so you
it's
know.
like someone's impersonating me, it's a health concern, it's a internet, just an annoying phone call.
Just annoying.
So,
They're just annoying. So I
yeah.
know on Apple they have like a specific report button. Is that just as good? Is that just as valid as these other methods?
To be honest, I don't know. I just delete them. possibly.
I imagine
Report
it's their
things.
version of the 7726.
I don't know if it goes to Apple for them to
Sure.
investigate. Again, or Android. I don't think those go to your carrier. So
Sure.
it maybe use the
Interesting.
7726. Again, or just delete like I do. So usually they don't text back. The other thing, so this is more of an Apple thing. I haven't played around with, Android or anything like that. But Apple did release what they call the contact key verification. So if you are an iOS user, and I think 70% of the US is at this point, there is deep in your settings, I believe on your iCloud settings. Think communication. It's somewhere in your iCloud settings, but take a look at contact key verification. There is the ability to verify users, and if that key ever changes, it'll notify you. So I know that I have set this up with my spouse to where, every once in a while you do actually need to communicate some sensitive info. And so what we've done is we've set that up. It gives a little check mark. It's similar to the old Twitter blue check mark, or X is maybe if they still have it on X. But usually there's some type of verification saying this person is who they intend to be. You can do that on text messages as well in iMessage. Similar, I also use things like Signal for certain individuals to be able to communicate, and it'll have a secret PIN, and when something changes, it notifies you when that key has changed. So you know that you're always talking to the right person, and it hasn't been intercepted at all. So
Interesting. Interesting. Are there like, is that Signal or are there like free options to that? Or is that a paid for
Signal is
service?
free.
Nice.
So it's an encrypted messaging platform. It works across different platforms. So if you're trying to message a Android user and you're on an iOS, you can still have full encrypted messaging between people. The problem with text messaging applications is you have to have some type of adoption on the other end. So again, a lot of security people tend to hang out on Signal for the encrypted nature of it, but things like family,
Yeah.
you can use iMessage as well. But
Sure.
and then Google is whatever flavor of communication app they decide to spin up and kill. So
Nice.
every other year there's a new one. So
Yeah. So we've talked about kind of the basic things you can do, but mentioning Signal, or I know in the past we've talked about MFA. What are kind of those a little bit deeper dive steps we can take to protect ourselves?
Protecting ourselves kind of from ourselves, right, is set up multi-factor. I've said it many times in the past, but I have sunglasses that say multi-factor everything on it. At some point I'll actually show them off on the camera. But again, even if you have a lack of judgment at the time, you give up your username and password, they don't have your multi-factor, right? And so make sure that you have multi-factor and set up on everything that's critical, especially the two most important accounts, anywhere where your finances are and your email. Email is the big one that if they ever get into there, They can initiate password resets for other websites and start resetting passwords because they have access to your email. So make sure you have that set up. Checking your accounts. So getting back to the finances is, do you know what you're spending? And if you do see a fraudulent charge, can you identify it? I'm not going to be the financial planner. A lot of people don't know every transaction that goes through. There's a lot of great resources out there to keep track of it. One of my favorite features when it comes to keeping a track of, you know, money that's being spent on the accounts or, you know, your credit card and banks, they almost always have the ability to send a text message or an email anytime that there's a transaction that exceeds a certain amount. 90% of the time it's to see all the things that my wife is purchasing on Amazon. But, you know, if there was ever a fraudulent charge, I would get notified and said, hey, this exceeded this dollar threshold. So that's how you can identify things very quickly after they happen. Probably the flags that I would keep an eye on is small transactions. Mm-hmm. So often to test a credit card before it's actually used for something is they'll make a small, like $1, $2, $3 transaction somewhere to validate that the card is active and that it has funds. And then from there, they'll use it for a larger purchase. My favorite was seeing a $3,000 Amazon purchase for trampolines, two different trampolines. I don't know why. But it started off with a small transaction, and then someone really wanted their own jump house or something. But
weird. What a weird thing to buy, I guess. I mean,
yeah. Why not buy like Bitcoin or something? Nope. Someone wanted two trampolines. So, other than that, sorry, that little tangent there. And then just continuing to educate others, right? When it comes to, I know this is a business podcast, but there's not a lot your employer can do when it comes to smishing, right? They'll educate you, say, just delete it, just move on, right? Mm-hmm. But in terms of, like, we're used to our employers being able to do, you know, email filtering and, you know, cut out a lot of the spam. We can't really do anything with your personal text messages. Again, this gets back to the phone providers. Oftentimes your phone plans are not even tied to your employer at all, right? There's nothing we can really do. And so education is the biggest thing. So tell others about it, share this podcast. All we can really do is say people are susceptible to emotional attacks, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone's trying to elicit some type of info from us, bank accounts, you know, anything where there's data to make or money to make, mm-hmm. whether it's data or direct access to an account.
For sure. As we wrap up here, I'm interested a little bit about the future because businesses, again, you know, we're mostly a business podcast. Obviously, we want you to be safe at home as well. But a lot of times businesses are asking people to use their personal devices. Do you think there will be more security tools or security requirements or training that businesses will be providing to their employees specifically about their devices? What does that future sort of look like?
Yeah, there's two parts of it. The security person that has the controls that we could put in place, and then the other part of I wish that they could just be properly segmented forever, right? Yeah. So I'll take it kind of two parts is managers, if you have employees, try not to text your employees about work-related stuff to their personal side of things. I am in the camp of personal communication methods or mediums are for personal communication. Work is for work. So if I need something from one of my employees, it's going to be instant messaging or a phone call, you know, or an email. Text messages, I don't want to bombard them. Again, I also think there's a delineation that should be made of when you're off of work, you're off of work. I might need something. If something is truly an emergency, I'll call you. I'm not going to text you. Right. And that can help out with some of that education, right? Just don't blur the lines intentionally. In terms of security controls, we already see some of this coming down the pipeline. So we already know that mobile device management solutions are out there today. Oftentimes they're just used to say, if the device is lost or stolen, can we automatically like wipe it remotely, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe just the corporate data, leave the rest of the phone. Or up in the more advanced sections, we do see internet, you know, inspection for mobile traffic. Most of the time, especially in the small businesses, we don't really see that. But there are tools out there that can do that for mobile. And then text messages and everything like that. Again, then we start crossing into privacy concerns.
Right. About,
can you read all my text messages and see my photos and everything like that? So unless it's a corporately owned phone, again, I don't want your data, right? I don't want to see that level of detail on your personal phone. I'd rather just, again, focus on the corporate data and what I can do with that and leave personal off to the side. So
for sure. It's interesting. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to come back to this in maybe a year or two and see if things have really changed, because I don't think that this smishing is going to go away. I think it's probably going to get a little bit more in the coming days.
Unfortunately, with how slow the US has moved with text messaging, I don't see it going anywhere. You know, we are one of the last countries that really truly uses text messaging all over the place. If you look at most countries, they're using online messenger applications that provide far richer experiences. So there's the Telegrams, the Signals, the WhatsApp, right? And so the US is truly a laggard when it comes to our text messaging. And, you know, the US government has been hounding the other agencies about better protecting it, you know, phone calls and text messaging and combating spam. And I won't get into all the politics of spam at the moment, but yes, if we're to go talk about the future, I think what we'll see is a far richer experience in the blending of online services and getting away from kind of antiquated SMS texting.
So. Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Neet.
Yeah, thank you.
If you enjoyed this topic, please let us know. Like, subscribe, or reach out to us at info@cit-net.com or head out to our website, cit-net.com/podcast. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode.